When local, state, or government officials talk about affordable housing, or their marketing department, the real estate news industry, talks about some new program they're talking about, you need to know they're lying. The program has never solved affordable housing in my entire lifetime. It's not doing anything of any good right now. And it never will in the future because it's not designed to solve the housing crisis. It's designed to grab power for those politicians and their constituents. Before I get into that, though, let's take a look at where the real estate market is, and we'll take a look at the real estate news industry for the week and see where the market's headed and try to make sure we can make the best decisions for ourselves. So in an economy, you have two parts. You have buyers and sellers. You have demand and supply. In real estate, demand is determined by interest rates. And right now, interest rates have again dropped into a favorable range down to 6.85% on Friday, down below 7%, which has been a critical factor. And you can see for the last year, rates have been about the same place. So this is going to keep the market in about the same where it's been. We had a slowing when rates went above 7, slightly 8%, but we're past that stage, at least for right now. Now, that doesn't mean rates are heading down. It means they went down. But that improvement has definitely caused some buyers to get reactivated and reinterested in the market as the drop in rates make the same house more affordable to a buyer. Now, on the supply side, which is how many homes are available for sale, that number similarly has stayed about the same all last year and this year. We're currently at an all-time low for non-pandemic years, about the same as last year, and below all non-pandemic years ever in recorded history. So what this means is with very low inventory, prices can't drop. Prices can only drop when there's more sellers looking to sell than there are buyers looking to buy. And since that's not the case, the market has been stabilized at these rates. And in fact, housing prices are probably, if anything, they're going up and projected to go up further. We'll get to that in a second. Locally in Los Angeles, the market is a little different in that we have continue to have a strong seller's market or a marginal seller's market between marginal and strong. The ranking, I use Atlas Research, Altos Research, which is fantastic. And they rank the market currently at 40. In terms of the number they use, and 30 would be a balanced market, so it's about a third to the right onto the seller side. And one of the key factors I've been watching for a while is the dollar per square foot, how much it costs to buy one square foot of an average house. And that number, after having dipped in the beginning of the year, has steadily increased. $850 per square foot is the average on closed sales in Los Angeles. So overall, the market in LA still remains to be a seller's market, still pretty strong, as you can see here, and it looks to be continuing in that direction given the lack of inventory. Now, I do make fun of the real estate press a lot, and I want to point out a good article that came out recently. Kiplinger, I think, got tired of misleading information, has a great article on to avoid probate, use trusts for estate planning. And this is really my core business. I help families, attorneys, estates, go through the probate process, which is very complicated. And I encourage people to get estate plan ahead of time to avoid probate when somebody passes or incapacitated. And here's a great article on Kiplinger that says that it describes how revocable and irrevocable trusts ensure assets go to beneficiaries while not having to go through a long, expensive, and public process of probate. So kudos to Kiplinger actually providing some good information for their readers. Now, if you ever thought, hey, housing prices are going to go up, they're going to go down, they're up again, they're down again. They seem all over the place. You're not the only one. Here is Lance Lambert puts together for the Resi Club, which is an organization that he publishes. He lists off all the predictions of forecasts for 2024. From the most optimistic, Home LLC at 5.5%, along with Goldman Sachs. And the negatives, the bottom being Morgan Stanley. So the difference between Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley alone is 8.5%, where the average over the last 20 years is about 2% per year. The variance is more than four times the average of the last year. It just shows you how wild the predictions are. And I think I would say overall, you should just project the normal amount is about 2.3% per year. And I think that's always a reasonable assessment of where the market's likely to headed, absent any changes. Now, of course, war could change things. Massive economic can change things. Political things can change things. We have an election coming up. But overall, one should project in the middle, and those higher numbers are probably just to get publicity and attention. Speaking of publicity and attention, Zillow, one of the purveyors of fake and misleading news in the real estate industry and news designed to help them at the expense of their clients, came out with a press release last week. Homes listed for sale in June sell for $7,700 more. Now, if you read that, you might go, well, that sounds great. I'll just list my home in June. It's February, March now. I'll list my home in June rather than I'll list it now. Is that really what the data says? Well, no, of course not. Zillow took a set of data, last year's numbers, and analyzed and concluded that June was the best month of the year last year. What they mention, don't put in the headlines, but they mention is that that's because interest rates had just dropped dramatically in May. Buyers reentered the market in May and June, closed escrow in July, and it looks like those sellers made a good decision when in reality, they just kind of got lucky based on where the market was. So if you can predict where mortgage rates are headed, then you can predict the best time to list your property. I think the advice I always give customers is the best time is always when it's the best time for you to sell. The other thing it doesn't address is how about those sellers who made $7,700 more on their sale, but paid more on the purchase? Meaning if you're selling a house for $500,000 and you get an extra couple percentage points, but you're buying a house for $1 million and you're paying a couple percentage points more there, you come out behind. And so this kind of advice, I think, is the kind of thing that just gives sellers enough to get confused and causes, I imagine Zillow's figured out, confused buyers shop on Zillow more often than anywhere else. I like to think that my customers call me to help decipher what otherwise to me just seems to be misleading information. Speaking of Zillow and misleading information, did I just say that? Here's a company, Spruce Point Management, that's betting against Zillow. They're shorting their stock. And they have a very detailed research report, which I thought was fabulous, that goes through really where Zillow is misleading financial analysts and the markets. One of the things they talk about is Zillow sends leads to realtors in exchange for a referral fee, and they book the fee when they send the referral out. Now, personally, I don't do that. I send referrals out to agents all the time. I only book it as income when the deal closes and I get paid my referral fee. But Zillow, because it's a venture capital company, what it means is it plays with investors' money, and the whole system is designed to disrupt industries and avoid paying taxes. They've made so many losses on paper over the years that they need to somehow prop up their numbers by pretending to generate revenue even when they're not. And so again, this is just another reason not to like Zillow. They don't pay their fair share taxes. They disrupt industries. And here they're really being accused, I think, quite fairly, of misstating their financial obligations or their financial activities in a way that's misleading investors into investing with them who might not. Now, one of the things I talked about when I started in the beginning today was about affordability. And one of the things you need to know is that politicians are using housing, affordability, homelessness as political tools to get more power. The last thing they're ever going to do is solve a problem. They make their money by working problems. So they're never going to solve the problem. Homelessness is a perfect example of that. Here's a case where the LA City Council president is criticizing an analysis by a city agency. Why? The city agency is saying they're not being effective in removing campsites that are unauthorized. Now, if you live in Los Angeles, you drive around, you see with your own eyes, there's more campsites. You see with your own eyes, campsites not being moved. You see campsites in inappropriate locations near schools or wherever on the streets. As a property manager with commercial properties, I can tell you this is a constant problem. Particularly in industrial and South LA, very much a problem. Driving out business, I literally had a phone call yesterday, Friday, from a business owner looking to sell his property. He just wants out of Los Angeles. He's sick of dealing with the encampments and such. But here you have a city that has paid other politicians to write a report. The report's negative, and so they criticize the report. That's politicians. The last thing they care about. Excuse me, last thing they care about is solving the problem. The problem is their business, how they make money. Now, towards that, Mayor Bass is taking victory laps on the basis that she exceeded her goal on housing by removing homelessness. And so here she shows her goal was 17,000 or so new homes, and they placed 21,000, and they got 7,700 vouchers and 3,500 new permanent units. If you live in Los Angeles, you drive around, does it look to you like the homeless problem is disappearing? I don't see it. I see it's hardening in certain areas. I think they've learned to be more low profile. But it is just overwhelming how many places we have freeway underpasses, parks. Of course, we now put them into motels, hotels, schools, campgrounds. It's amazing how many people we have here in inappropriate housing. And yet our mayor is taking some victory laps with six different graphs showing what a great job she's done. So don't believe your own eyes. Don't believe what you say. So one thing to talk about was affordable housing and how when they use that term, they're lying. And they get to look at how they use it as a political weapon. Here's an opinion piece. This is from the Portland, Maine Press Herald. It says, our view, voting against affordable housing, rejection exposes stubbornness, short-sightedness, and self-interest. So what politicians do is they say, hey, if you don't want to have a bunch of people can't really afford to live anywhere, put into housing by your city, in your neighborhood, across the street from you and your kids, maybe between where your kids are live and walk to school, then you are stubborn and you are short-sighted, and most of all, you're only interested in your own self-interest. Not the politicians are self-interested. They're not raising money for campaigns. Their only job in life isn't running for political office. No, they're not self-interested. You are, because you don't want low-income housing built in your neighborhood. That's the political tool they use against voters. What they will never do is look at whether or not the policies are effective, meaning in my lifetime, since 1986, I've been in real estate, housing prices have become less and less affordable almost every year, and the rate is increasing more and more. As we don't build more housing and we bring in way more people and the natural population increases, housing becomes less affordable every year. But don't believe your eyes. Believe politicians. So here's a case where New York is another example. Now, normally, when we debate public policy, other states are considered test grounds. We use them as proof whether policy works or not. Here's New York saying, proof that Albany's pro-tenant reforms are killing New York City housing. Now, we know it's true in LA too. But here's a case where New York started before we did with affordable housing, forcing cities to accept low-income housing in their neighborhoods, residents fighting that. As a result, those units aren't being built, politicians refusing to build any other housing. And so since they won't approve other housing, and the low-income housing is being approved, there's no housing being built, it makes all housing more expensive. So that's what's gone in Los Angeles my entire lifetime. That's what's gone in California. And it's also happening apparently in Albany. One of the other tools that California is unique in using, only in California does the state government force cities to accept policies they don't approve. And so here's a case. We had previously a case we talked about in Beverly Hills where they can't even do remodels, additions, or pools until they agree to more low-income housing. And then we talked about Huntington Beach having their housing plan stopped, and then the city of Orange. And now we have La Cunada Flint Ridge, a nice, sleepy little town if you've ever been there. And again, they cannot build more houses until they satisfy Sacramento bureaucrats who've never built a house, never sold a house, maybe never even bought or sold a house in their lives. Until those bureaucrats are satisfied that La Cunada Flint Ridge has enough low-income housing in their small city, they will not approve the city's plan to build any other housing. And that's where we're at today. So what is it that's affordable? It's not affordable. It's state-sanctioned, state-designed, state-designated housing where the state gets to pick the residents, the state gets to claim the value of those houses being done, and they refuse to allow any competition because in a competitive environment, nobody would choose to live in a low-income housing project built by the state. People would rather have affordable rental units and affordable housing units to live in and raise their families. What do you think? Is affordable housing problem getting better, solved by our politicians, or worse? Is the homelessness getting better or worse? Put your comments down below. Love to see your comments. Love to see you. If you like this, like it. If you don't like it, subscribe. Give me your comments. As always, I'm Bill Gross at Bill Gross Probate on social media. Make today your best day ever. Thanks so much.